My main speaker tonight is Pat Y.
Hi, everybody. My name is Pat, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm glad to be here tonight and very glad to be sober. I'd like to welcome the new people to Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the best thing that has ever happened to me. I'm sober 19 years and about a month. Never in my wildest imagination did I think 19 years ago I would still be here. But here I am. Normally I don't mind speaking at all. It's something that I'm relatively comfortable doing, but I sort of had the tape from hell today, and I'd really rather be in a better place when I talk. On the other hand, today is Vince's and my wedding anniversary. I can't stay married this long because I can't get along with anybody for that period. So we're married 14 years, and I love him more today than I did when I married him, and that's certainly not me. I kind of burn out, you know, and sometimes by the very next morning. So it's a miracle that we're married and that I love him, and you know, thinking about, you know, you get kind of nostalgic on anniversaries and stuff. And thinking about it, it sort of got the rest of the day into perspective. I mean, the other stuff that's going on is just stuff. You know, it mostly has to do with money, and fear of financial insecurity is the one sort of little thing that comes back to haunt me all the time. But it's just so much stuff. You know, we have our health and our sobriety. Well, I have my health. Vince is... He does have his health. He's very healthy. He's doing very well. But you know, what's interesting to me is this. I was thinking today, for those of you who don't know, my husband Vince, who is a sober member of this group, had a heart attack a couple of months ago, and it was scary. You know, it was really scary. And I was sitting one day at the hospital, maybe the third day or the fourth day, and I was thinking back to one time my second husband, that would be my most recent husband before Vince, being the third husband, just so you can keep the scorecard straight. My second husband was very, this is when I was drinking, he was very sick one night. He had, the flu or something. He had a really, really high fever and was delirious. I mean, he was really out of his mind. He's on the couch, and he was clearly very ill and clearly should be in a hospital. It was a real cold night. It was raining hard. We lived in a second-floor apartment. I knew that because he really was not in his right mind, I knew that there was no way that I could just sort of, like, take him down to the car and get him to the hospital. And there was not a single person that I could think of to call to come and help me because I had no friends. I literally could not think of one single person that I could call that could come help me take my husband to the hospital that night. And I really was afraid that he was going to die. And I was thinking when Vince was in the hospital, I would periodically get up and go to the payphone down the hall and call our office to pick up messages and call home to pick up messages. And I still have the piece of papers on which I wrote all these messages, and literally hundreds of you called a day. There were hundreds of messages. I'm not exaggerating. You know, I mean, it's amazing to me that many people care enough to reach out to let us know, you know, that you were thinking about us. Alcoholics Anonymous gave that to us. You know, I was proud of myself as a loner. I certainly was a loner. I liked to think of it as sort of by choice. You know, I don't need people. I'm a loner. I saw that as somehow sort of a romantic thing to be. But the truth of the matter is, nobody wanted to be around me, and nobody had wanted to be around me for years. You know, I was a falling down, sort of disgusting, not sort of, falling down, disgusting, drunken woman. You know, I have never done anything that could really be termed social drinking. I got drunk the first time when I was 13 and behaved real badly and humiliated myself that night, and got sober when I was 30 and behaved badly and humiliated myself that night, you know, and it never really got much better anywhere in between there. I'm a girl who came from a nice family in Newport Beach, and I went to church and Sunday school when I was a kid, and had strong moral ideals about how I intended to live my life, and I never even came close to measuring up to, and it wasn't that the church gave me these ideals. I mean, I really wanted this for myself. It's the way I wanted to live my life, but I was simply incapable of doing it, because when I pick up a drink, it all goes out the window, and I'm incapable of not picking up a drink. I don't know if there's a point in there that if I had tried to quit drinking that I could have, you know, early on. I just know that by the time the years rolled around and I got ready to try to quit drinking, I couldn't do it. You know, I tried every day to quit drinking and I couldn't do it. I would walk in the house and tell myself that, you know, I'd get up in the morning and tell myself that today I'm not going to drink, but by the time I walked in the house after work, I needed one so bad. It was so easy to tell myself, well, you know, I'll quit tomorrow. There's a little bit of scotch in this bottle on the kitchen sink. I'll just drink this down and tomorrow there'll be nothing in the house and then I'll quit. But if there's a little bit of scotch in the bottle on the kitchen sink, as the level of that bottle goes down, I get a little nervous and I got to call the liquor store to deliver a new one because I'm an alcoholic and I can't, it makes me very nervous when the level of the bottle goes down. And I never could quite hit it, passing out on the last drop, you know. And I don't think it would have mattered. I'm a believer that, by the way, if you're new, everything I say is just my opinion, but I'm a believer that, you know, you get sober when you're ready to get sober, and just not a minute before. I certainly qualified for Alcoholics Anonymous long before, years before I got here. But I don't know that that I would have had any interest at all in staying had I come then. You know, I had to do what I had to do. And as I said, I drank in the bars and in the streets as long as I could, and it was, you know, awful. I behaved badly. I woke up with strange people. I went to jail. It was not, you know, it was just terrible drinking. And I spent the last few years of my drinking pretty much drinking at home in a rocking chair in my living room in a purple flannel bathrobe. I hated my husband. I hated my family. I hated my job. I hated myself. And I would play those sad records, you know, over and over and over again and cry and drink. I liked Ray Charles' Born to Lose. I'd play that and just cry. I mean, it was so wonderful the way he sang that. You know, I'd call people on the phone, you know, boyfriends that I had when I was 12, maybe. I'm now in my late 20s and it's 3 in the morning and maybe I have to call 10 or 12 people to get this fellow's current phone number, you know, track him down. My mother was the only person in the world who still took my phone calls when I got sober. The rest of you, when you heard my voice on the other end of the line, although you generally knew it was me before you even heard my voice by the hour of the call, but when you heard my voice, you were very brief with me and were not interested in talking to me. My mother always did. My mother has always loved me and tried to help me. She would get these terrible drunken, filled with despair, crying, hysterical phone calls in the middle of the night and try to say something to comfort me or to calm me down. And of course, there is nothing, you know. There's really not much you can say to a drunk, but she tried. And today it's so different. You know, my mother's gone through a pretty tough summer. Actually, she's gone through quite a lot in the last couple of years, and this summer in particular. And she turns to me for comfort and advice you know, to be of service to her. And she does that because she knows that I will be there for her 100% and that I, in fact, will be of help to her. And I have been of considerable help to her, both in a physical sense and emotionally. And that's impossible. I'm selfish and self-centered, as the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous describes us. I am completely that way. And yet you have enabled me to become a person that my mother turns to. And you know, you can't hardly get from there to here. Alcoholics Anonymous has changed my life in every way. When I got here 19 years ago, I didn't want to be here, but I didn't have any other idea. I remember coming to my first meeting, which was this group's Saturday night meeting. I was just terrified, and I remember walking in the door. Clint Hodges was the secretary of the meeting. I remember he put out his hand and said, "Hello, my name is Clint. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous," and I felt welcome when he said that. I didn't particularly want to be there, but I felt welcome, you know. And I went in the room, and I stood in the back of the room, and I hadn't drank that day. It was, you know, almost 8:30 in the evening. I hadn't drank, and I was scared and shaking and sweating real bad, which was sort of a side effect of drinking. I thought I had some glandular problem, you know. Honestly, I have used every deodorant and antiperspirant that has ever been on the market trying to rid myself of this terrible sweating problem. Then I got sober, and about 6 months went by, and I realized I didn't sweat like that anymore. What a blessing. You know, I'm so grateful. Actually, I'm sweating a little now, but I'm either nervous or it's a hot flash. I hope I'm nervous. I stood in the back of that room and dressed in terrible clothes and sick and shaking and sweating, and Claude came up to me and asked me if I was new, and I remembered wondering how in the world he would know that I was new, and I said yes I was, and all these women gathered around and they were all writing their phone numbers on little slips of paper, and you have to say something, this is just my opinion, I have lots of opinions, When I was new, nobody had business cards, it seems like. I mean, I don't remember anybody ever handing me a business card. We didn't have the thing that we have now, the stag list, where, you know, a newcomer comes in, we just hand them a list. I mean, people wrote their numbers on everything, napkins, you know, from the cookie table, and the backs of check stubs, and, you know, all kinds of stuff. And there was something, I don't know, to me, better about that. I like the idea that my sponsor, when I was new, made me go ask you for your phone numbers and then made me call you the next day. I mean, I like it now. I didn't like it then. Don't misunderstand. I hated it then. The idea of I didn't have any trouble asking you for your phone number because my sponsor also had told me at every meeting I was to go around and say hello to everybody and ask them how they were. And after I say hello, how are you, I got nothing left to say. I don't know how to do social chit-chat. So to ask you for your phone number was one more little additional piece of business I could do there, you know. And so my direction was to ask three people at every meeting, women, for their phone numbers, and then the next day to call those three people in addition to calling my sponsor. I was incredible. The idea of calling somebody sober was just appalling to me. I mean, I can't imagine doing such a thing. I remember I said to her, what do I talk about? And she said, well, it'll just sort of take care of itself. Well, I don't like that much. I mean, I don't, you know, I'd like a little more. So I would sit by the phone. My fear was always that she wouldn't know who I was when I called, you know. In retrospect, I might have said, hi, I'm the one who cried through the whole meeting last night, and you probably would have known who I was, but I never actually thought of that. I would take this deep breath, dial the phone, you'd answer, I'd go, hi, my name is Pat, I have long brown hair and glasses, and my sponsor told me I had to call three people every day, and you're one of them for today, how are you? Now, I don't know if those people remembered who I was or not, but they all acted like they did, which is all that's really necessary. And I don't think I ever had very lengthy conversations with any of those people, but they all, you know, asked me how I was doing or told me something about their day and wished me a nice day, and we would hang up and I'd call the next one. And I never saw the point. Quite frankly, I never saw the point of any of my sponsor's directions when I was new. I would tell her this lengthy, you know, litany of what's wrong with me and my life today, and then she would say things like, clean your living room, call three people, go to a meeting. Now, my husband and I aren't speaking. We have severe financial problems. You're not, excuse me, can we get back to the problem here for a minute? Just do those things and I'll talk to you at the meeting. I never saw the point of any of it. Mercifully, I did it. You know, I whined and I cried all the time, although I didn't whine and cry so much to her. I whined and cried to my friends and anybody else who would listen, but I was enough afraid of her that I, you know, that I somewhat limited my whining directly to her. But I never did see the point of anything. I can tell you if you're new that there's a point to everything. Every direction I've ever been given in Alcoholics Anonymous has had some effect later on down the road that I, or certainly even my sponsor, could have predicted at the time that I was taking the action. For example, calling three people every day. You know, I did that for a long, long time. And I did it pretty much until I had everybody's phone number in the group, actually, when you get right down to it. And the group was a little smaller then, but I did that. I never saw the point. I never got very comfortable making those calls, but I did it because she told me to do it. When I was about 3.5 years sober and my then husband was laying in the hospital dying of cancer, I was at the hospital one day and it was a particularly terrible, terrible day, and I remembered thinking, I can't do this. I just can't do it another minute. It's too hard. I'm going to go crazy. I can't do it. And I thought, gee, maybe I better call my sponsor. And so I stepped into the phone booth there, and I called my sponsor, and she wasn't home. And this was before anybody had answer machines. I mean, it just rang, no answer. And I hung up, and the dime came back, and I, without even thinking, got my little phone book out of my purse, and I called another member of AA, and that person wasn't home either. The long and the short of this story is I called 11 people that day at the hospital before somebody was home. And it never once occurred to me to step out of that phone booth and say, well, screw it, you know, what's the use? I just kept dialing until somebody answered. And Clancy is the person who eventually answered. He probably doesn't even remember this. And it wasn't like there was any magic answer that he could give me. I mean, the situation was what it was. But he said something. I believe he made me laugh on the phone that day, which made me relax a little bit. I felt just a little bit better when I hung up. And, you know, it took me a long time after that to realize that's why my sponsor had me calling three people every day. So when the day came when I really, really, really needed to talk to somebody, you know, when I was really up against it, it would be so automatic to make the call that I would just automatically make it and would not think of doing anything else. Every direction I've been given in AA has had that sort of effect. I didn't want to do any of these steps when I was new. I don't know about you, but I looked at them and I picked out right of the way the ones that I wasn't too interested in. I I knew what you wanted in that inventory. You wanted my secrets, and I had a couple of big ones, and I just knew I could never share them with anybody. The day came, of course, when my sponsor suggested I start writing my inventory. I said, oh, sure. And by then, I guess I was about 6 months sober, and I had already decided that I would just share everything else. I just wouldn't write about those couple of little things. She would not never know, because there was enough other bad stuff. She'd think that was my secret, you know. And so I that was my intention, just to write everything else and leave these two little, tiny little things out. And but every time I sat down with my direction was to sit down every day with my pencil and paper and write something. And I would sit down. I sat down every day for maybe a week, and I couldn't write a word, because all I could think about were these big secrets. You know, my pencil would not move. And I finally thought, all right, well, we're not getting anywhere here. I think I'll just write these secrets down, but I will never take a fifth step. And that's the only way that this was not some kind of a little mind game I was playing with myself. I really meant it. I will just never do a fifth step. But maybe if I do a third or fourth step, somehow I can stay sober. Because I've been here long enough to know that I wanted what you had, and I wanted to stay sober. So I wrote those secrets down. And of course, once I wrote them down, the rest of it sort of came a lot easier. And one day my sponsor said, have you finished your inventory? I said, yes. And she said, come over next Tuesday and read it to me. This was like a Thursday or something. She said that. That's really cruel. This is Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I get to think about this. And, of course, I thought of nothing else. And I thought, again, you know, she doesn't know what my secrets are. I just won't read those first two paragraphs. I'll just start in the middle of the first page there where a new thought starts, and I just won't read that. And that was my complete and full intention when I drove over to her house that night. I remember I sat down on her couch, and I opened my notebook, and I put my finger where I wanted to start so I wouldn't make a mistake and be reading in the wrong paragraph there. And I started to read, and she said, well, now, wait, before we do this, I think maybe it'd be a good idea to get on our knees and say a little prayer. And I remember feeling sort of embarrassed. I've never prayed in anyone's living room before, and I felt pretty awkward, but I got down on my knees, and she said something like, dear God, please help Pat be honest tonight. I'm not sure how she knew about those paragraphs, but I read the whole thing to her, and you know, it took me longer to read these two little itsy-bitsy paragraphs than it did pages and pages that came after, because I just cried and carried on, so, but I did it. You know, I did it. I remember we burned my inventory in her kitchen sink that night, practically burned her apartment down. She said, it would really be good if you could save this. I said, I can't. If my husband ever found this, and there really was, she could see the wisdom of not having this document lying around the house, and so we burned it in her kitchen sink and with some little bit of ceremony. And she told me how to go home and take the sixth and seventh step, as it describes in the book, to find a quiet place and to review what I had done. And I did that. And you know, I didn't feel like the weight of the world was off my shoulders, which is kind of what I had hoped to feel. Mostly, what I felt was committed to Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew I'd done something real hard that night that I can't do of myself, and yet somehow I had done it. And I felt really a part of this, I think, for the first time, and it felt kind of good. I also felt very exposed, because I had told this woman some real stuff about me. And I remember thinking as I was driving home, God, what if she gets drunk? You know, she knows things about me. As it happened, she did get drunk. She's sober today, quite a long time, but she did get drunk, and she never told anything, you know, nothing. I've never shared anything in Alcoholics Anonymous that's ever come back to hurt me in any way whatsoever. And I don't know anybody who's ever shared anything in AA that's ever come back to hurt them, you know, in any way. Anyway, my sponsor suggested that I started making amends, and I wasn't really too interested in doing that. I really didn't see that I had a lot of amends to make. You know, I sort of had the attitude for a long time that I really only hurt myself. You know, and the truth of the matter is I hurt everybody. If you knew me, the chances are I hurt you. Because I am selfish and self-centered. I care nothing about anybody. I have, you know, run rampant through people's lives, caring not one whit for their feelings or thoughts. I remember the first formal amends that I made was to my father, to my real father, who I've never had a very close relationship with. My parents were divorced when I was quite young, but I certainly did owe him amends. And he would come and take me to lunch maybe twice a year, and that was sort of our contact at the time. And one of those lunches was coming up, and so I thought, well, this is it. You know, I'll have this conversation with him. And he came and picked me up at work, and we went, and we're in the car driving to the restaurant, and he's chatting about something, and I'm just crazy thinking now, all right, now how do I start here? And I'm hearing not a word he is saying. And we get to the restaurant, and we're looking at the menu, and I'm trying to think of, you know, how I'm going to do this. And the waiter, and it seemed like it kept getting interrupted, and just when I would sort of, and Now we're in the car and we're on the way back to my office. I was working at that time at the corner of, I think, Sunset and Vine, which is sort of a major intersection. And he double parked, you know, sort of just pulled up double parked in front of the building, and I said, "Dad, I need to talk to you." And he seemed to realize that it was important, and he pulled into a parking lot, and we had a long talk that day, and I told him that I knew I had been a, you know, a terrible daughter and a heartache to him, and that I was going to try to be a better daughter, and he's a very loving man, and he, you know, it was very well received, and so it was, it sort of got me off to, I thought, well, this is good, you know, and I deliberately picked him because I thought it would be an easy one to start with, because I know how he is, you know, and then I could go on and tackle some of the harder ones, you know, having a little success, so to speak, under my belt, and it was hard because most of the people I was making amends to, I hated, you know, most of the people I was making amends to, I thought they had wronged me way more than I had wronged them, you know. I mean, if I've done some little bad thing here and you've done huge bad things over here, so what, you know? But my sponsor kept making me focus on what I had done. I think the hardest was with my my then-husband, you know. By the time I got sober, we weren't hardly speaking at all. We'd been fighting for years and years and years, and after I came to AA, we just started fighting about me being an Alcoholics Anonymous. He didn't want me, it's not that he didn't want me sober, he didn't want me gone every night. You know, he didn't understand why I had to go to meetings every night. Neither did I, so I had a little trouble explaining it to him, you know. He thought that I was coming to AA to meet men, which was a good guess. I was certainly hoping to meet some men here. None of the men here appeared to be interested in me when I was new, which really hurt my feelings. I thought that, I really thought that when I stopped drinking, somehow I lost my charm. I mean, I never had any trouble in bars attracting men, and now I'm in AA, and absolutely nobody is giving me any notice whatsoever. It also really annoyed me that he was accusing me of something I wasn't doing right at that minute, you know. I felt so sorry for myself. I really did. I cried all the time. I thought, and I would tell anybody who'd listen, you know, if you were married to my husband, if you had my life, you'd want to drink too. I mean, this, it's so awful. It's so terrible. And one night, I can't believe I'm telling this story. I don't usually tell this in this group. One night when I was about 10 months sober, I spotted a newcomer guy come in the door. I think it was his first meeting. I leaped across some chairs to introduce myself to him. My sponsor noticed and beckoned me off to the side of the room and reminded me that I was a married woman. And I remember I had such a whine in my voice. I didn't recognize it then, but I can sure in retrospect hear it. I remember standing there saying to her, "Yeah, but I'm so unhappy." And she said, "Nonetheless, Pat, you're married. And as long as you're married, I expect you to act married." I said, "You know, I don't see this as a problem. I'll get divorced." And she said, "No, we in Alcoholics Anonymous, like there's some meeting going on about me, you know. We in Alcoholics Anonymous don't think it's a great idea to make major moves like that in our first year of sobriety. Why don't you just stay right where you are and be married and act married?" But I was obsessed, you know. I couldn't understand why she couldn't, why would God get this guy sober in this group if he didn't mean for us to be together? This is so clear to me. His sponsor was a guy named Marv R., who used to be in the group, who still, you know, pops up once in a while. And I can hardly to this day look at Marv without feeling embarrassed, honest to God. I mean, it's so humiliating to think back on it. So, you know, we have these strict instructions to stay away from each other. Well, you know how much good that does. So we start this business of, you know, it starts where you brush up against each other in the coffee line. And then he's walking me to my car, and then I'm parking further and further away. You know. It was difficult to arrange this liaison. I'm a married woman, as you may remember, I just mentioned, and he's a new, you know, I don't have a place that we can go to. He's a newcomer. He doesn't have a place at all. I was at that time working at a record company in Hollywood, and he was working very conveniently in Hollywood at a porn bookstore. That bookstore, it's on Western Avenue or Boulevard or whatever it is, and I have occasion, because our office is sort of in that general area, and I have occasion to drive by that bookstore maybe a couple of times a month, and I'll tell you, I hope they never tear it down, because it sure is a good reminder for me. I don't ever want to live like this again. So I arranged this long lunch hour one day at work. I arranged for somebody to cover for me at work, and I went down to the bookstore and picked him up. He didn't have a car either. We spent some time together at a motel on Sunset Boulevard, and I took him back to his place of employment afterwards. And I was driving back to my office that afternoon, and it occurred to me that I was 10 months sober, and I was living exactly the way I had always lived. I'd been sitting in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous for 10 months, hearing you say, night after night after night, that I was going to have to change everything about the way I was living my life, or I was surely going to drink and die. And I was real scared because I don't think I can change. I've never wanted to live like this. I just always have. And now I'm doing it sober, too. You know, I always sort of use the excuse, well, I was drunk when I did that. Well, you know, I was drunk when I did that. Now I'm cold stone sober. I'm 10 months in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm behaving the same. Only reason I hadn't done it sooner is nobody had asked, and that's the truth, you know. I was afraid to tell my sponsor what I'd done because she had been quite clear in her direction about this guy. But the bottom line is I don't want to drink, so I told her that night. As a matter of fact, I got to the meeting, and she wasn't there yet, and I grabbed a woman I barely knew, and I told her, because I needed to tell somebody right away before I chickened out. And so I told this virtual stranger who just sort of looked at me aghast and said, well, your sponsor will be here soon. And then I told my sponsor, and she said, you know, you've learned a real good lesson today. You've learned that you're probably not a woman who could cheat on her husband and stay sober, and you don't have to live that way anymore if you don't want to. Okay? I don't want to. I've never wanted to. Not wanting to doesn't make it so, you know. I don't see how Alcoholics Anonymous can help me change my life. I don't get it. I just don't get it. What I did there is a day at a time. This sounds so simple when I say it. A day at a time, I stayed away from this guy. A day at a time, I didn't drive by that bookstore. A day at a time, I didn't call him. A day at a time, I didn't take his calls. A day at a time, when I saw him in meetings, I shook hands with a straight arm and kept moving, said hello and kept moving. That's it. That's all I did. I didn't explain to him what was going on. That was the end of it. The obsession, of course, eventually passed, because obsessions always do. But the really good news for me is I don't live that way anymore, you know. I never dreamed when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that I could change the way I lived my life. It never dawned on me that that might happen here. I thought somehow you don't drink and it's all kind of white-knuckled and boring and you're going to have a lot of free time. How in the world are you going to fill this free time? I wish I had some of that free time I thought I was going to have. I haven't had any in about, I don't know, 15 years, I think. But it's so much different than I expected. You know, my first sponsor, I think I mentioned, drank. And I got another lady to be my sponsor who was sober a long time, and I was about a year and a half sober at this time. I was still sniveling and whining around these meetings. And she said, you know, I've watched you and listened to you snivel, and it seems to me that all you do is whine about this husband of yours. Why don't you just, day at a time, try to act like a kind and loving wife? It was not at all an appealing idea. I didn't like him. He certainly didn't like me, and I didn't see the point. I didn't think the marriage could be saved. I just simply didn't see the point. She suggested to me that I owed this man a lot of amends for, you know, the stuff that I had done, and that might be a way that I could make some amends, that maybe I would have to walk away from the marriage at some point down the road. But for right now, today, while I'm there, why didn't I just stay there and act like a kind and loving wife? And then maybe if I did have to walk away at some future point, I might be able to do it without any guilt. Guilt was the word that got my attention there, because I certainly had it, you know, a lot of guilt in that relationship. And so I started trying to do what this woman taught me to do. It was hard. I don't know how to be a kind and loving wife. I don't know how to treat you with courtesy. But I took very specific directions from her. She gave me very specific things to go home and do and say, and I did them. Some days I did them better than others, you know, but I did them. And, you know, time passed, and one night I was on my knees saying my prayers, which were real, real, real simple and short in those days. In the morning I would get on my knees and say, Dear God, please help me stay sober today. Amen. And at night I would get on my knees and say, Dear God, thank you for keeping me sober today. Amen. I did that because my sponsor told me to do it. I believe in God. I've always believed in God, but in all the time I've been sober there, I never felt a connection to God. I just did it. I worried a lot about, do you fold your hands like this or like this, and what if my husband comes in? And I always did it when he was in the bathroom or something. God forbid he should see me praying. I don't know why that embarrassed me, but it did. So I certainly never felt any spiritual connection, but I did it every day regardless, and that, you know, morning and night. And one night I was on my knees saying that prayer, Dear God, thank you for keeping me sober today. And I started to get up, and I realized that I was kind of comfortable in that house with that husband. You know, and I couldn't believe it. I mean, I hate this guy. I hate him more than I can tell you. And yet, I was comfortable there. I got back down on my knees that night, and I said, you know, I remember thinking, how can this be? You know, yesterday I hated him, and today I'm comfortable. And then I thought, well, no, yesterday I was comfortable too. You know, it's like, this is the biggest problem in my life, and I missed the exact moment that it went away. You know, it's really astounded me. You know, it's amazing when you think about it. I understand how that happens today, because I had enough experience at it. The reason that happens is because I've been real busy in the solution for a long time. I've been so busy in the solution, I'd forgotten about the problem before it went away, and that's the truth. It's hard for me to believe it, but I know that is exactly what happened. I remember I got back down on my knees that night, and I said, God, I believe if you mean for me to stay married to this man, that I could do that and stay sober and you know, possibly even have a happy and joyous life. And thank you. And it was the first time I thanked God for anything other than just being sober. Not so long after that is when we found out that he had cancer. And, you know, being the selfish, self-centered person I am, my very first thought was, I wish this would have happened when I hated him. You know, I think about me. How am I going to be? How's this going to affect me? How am I going to feel? Never mind, he's going to die. What about me? You know, I don't like this about me. But there it is. You know, what I did is I kept doing what I had been doing all along, acting like a kind and loving wife. I had become a kind and loving wife. He was sick for a year and a half, and he did die, and it was hard, but it was also the best year and a half of our marriage, you know, because of what you taught me to do. Because I was there and in such a loving manner when he needed me to be there. And he knew that I wasn't there just because he was sick and dying, but because that's where I wanted to be, because I had consistently been there for a good period of time. When he died, I remember being at the funeral, and so many of you were there. None of you ever had met him, you know, but you were there. And I remember feeling so grateful that I had stayed and done the things that my sponsor had suggested when all of my best judgment had told me to get out now while you're still young. I remember I thought a lot about things like, get out while you're still young and have your looks. I mean, I don't know that I had looks then, but I, you know, you think these things. And I'm so grateful that I stayed there, because I would have missed all of that, you know. And I believe that there's no question I would have missed the way I'm living my life today. You know, Vince and I are married 14 years today, and I hate people who do this. I know that I would not be able to be the kind of a wife I am to him if I hadn't learned how to do it there with my late husband. You know, I learned the tools there. If I hadn't learned it there, I'd be practicing on Vince, and I know he's glad I learned it somewhere else. You know? We have a really, really happy life together. The seemingly bad things, as Keith Carpenter would say, that are going on, you know, financial worries and so on, are just that. They're seemingly bad things. I don't know how this is all going to turn out in the end. But every seemingly bad thing I've gone through in sobriety has turned out better in the end than I could have even imagined. My vision is pretty limited, you know. A problem comes up in my life, and my vision is so limited, I see the answer is right here, you know, right over the next bend. I can't see the big picture. God's answers for me have always been light years better than any answers I could come up for myself. If you're new, I'd like to welcome you to Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope that you stay here. I hope that you get a sponsor. I think it's the most important thing you can do. I don't know how a person would ever do this without a sponsor. If you do not have one, I highly recommend you get one before you leave this room. And if you don't know how to get one, I can help you out. You need somebody who's sober. You need somebody who's a winner in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a lot of winners in this room, a lot of winners. Turn to the person next to you, or look around and see who's doing things after the meeting. Who are the activists in the meeting? Go ask one of those people to be your sponsor, and you know, it may very well save your life. The second thing that I like to recommend that people do is get a home group, and I think this is the best group in the entire world. I'm so grateful that I came here and got sober here. You know, I thought everybody did it this way for a long time, and still, until I started going to some meetings, you know, around the community, and discovered that not everybody does it with as much enthusiasm and joy as we seem to do it here. That sounds like I'm putting down other groups, and I'm not. People are staying sober everywhere. I just like the way we're doing it here better than anywhere, you know, and I've been to a lot of other meetings, and so I recommend that you make this your home group. By the way, about sponsorship, let me say this. There seems to be a tendency today, I don't know if this happens to you, but I've had people come up to me, and it seems like they're interviewing me to see if I would be a suitable sponsor for them, new people, and I find that so interesting, because if you're new, you wouldn't know a good sponsor if you were talking to one. I mean, how would you know? You have absolutely no frame of reference whatsoever. So whatever criteria you have in your mind, forget it. You know, just forget it. Go get a winner in Alcoholics Anonymous and ask them to help you. The third thing that I highly recommend that you do if you're new is to make a friend right away. Somebody around your own length of sobriety that you can hang out with and talk to and bounce your stuff off of and whine to so you don't drive your sponsor crazy, you know. My first friend's name was Betty, and we talked all the time. Betty knew more about me than anybody in the world. I told her everything before I told it to my sponsor. You'd like to hear how it's going to sound out loud sometimes, you know, before you actually call your sponsor. And I'd call Betty and say, Betty, here's what I'm thinking of doing. And sometimes she'd say what I hoped, which was, oh, yeah, I've done that, or, you know, whatever. Mostly she said stuff like, oh, my gosh, you better call your sponsor right now. It's a really good kind of friend to have. I tried to be that kind of a friend back to her. I hope that I was. I know that I've learned a lot about being a friend here. I have had better friends over the years than I have ever been, and from those kinds of friends, I have learned to be a better friend myself. I'm very happy to be sober here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm grateful for the help that I've gotten over the years. My sponsor today is Evelyn, who I love so much, and who has helped me so much over the years. I'm thrilled to be celebrating 14 years of marriage with Vince, and to be 19 plus years sober. I hope that I never drink again, but I would hope that nobody in this room would ever drink again, but it ain't going to be so. You know, some of the people in this room are going to die drunk. I hope that it's not me. I know that the only thing I can do to ensure that it's not me is to keep doing the stuff that I've been doing for these 19 years that seems to work. If you're new, jump in here with us and join us. It's the best thing that's ever happened to me. Thank you.